Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, which guna are you living in? Have you been asked that before? What's your favorite guna? What's a guna? G-U-N-A. Well, we're going to find out because we're going to learn about ancient Egypt and the gunas that it has taught us and how we can understand today from yesterday. And to do that the best way possible is with this wonderful author, a star guest on Energy Stew, and I'm so glad to have her back, Tricia McCannon. Tricia, welcome.
Hi, Peter. Hi, wonderful audience out there, whether you're in New York or the whole East Coast or all around the nation. So thank you so much for tuning in.
Well, let's talk about the way I started the show because let's just talk about why Egypt has so much to offer and what it has done for the world in this long history since its ancient days.
Well, Peter, as you know, I am a prodigious historian and researcher, but I'm also a mystic and I'm a teacher of the great spiritual mysteries. And I really honor all the mysteries in all the different countries of the world, from Christianity to Buddhism, Hinduism, Greek, Roman, Druid, Native American, Mayan. I mean, they're all amazing. But really, to me, the motherland of the great spiritual mysteries is ancient Egypt. And, perhaps if we look at the two great fonts, we can go to the east and look at, let's say, the Eastern masters, who, of course, have been amazing. In Hinduism, the Vedic scripts, the Upanishads, all of those are great. But it's hard for the normal person to go hike up the, Tibetan trails and find those masters. In the ancient world, the font, really, of the motherland was ancient Egypt. And that was actually accessible. You could actually go like Pythagoras did and Plato did and Socrates did and many of the great Greek philosophers that we think are the bedrock literally of Western civilization. But, as the Greek historian Herodotus said in 450 BC, we Greeks are as children. Everything we ever learned of any importance we got from the Egyptians. So he was really honoring the fact that the Egyptian culture was very ancient, very wise, and very old. And when you begin to talk about the three gunas, that is, by the way, an East Indian term, but it's one that applies to any civilization. It applies to our civilization today. The ancient masters believed that there were three basic waves of creation. There was the upward moving energy that basically connects us with the source and with our higher self. That was called Sattva. Sattva means golden, the golden age, the Sattva yugas, the golden ages. But there's also Sattva activities like meditating, for example, or being in nature or eating healthy food. These are all things that align us with our higher purpose, our higher self. There's also downwardly pulling energies, which are called tamasic. Tamasic would be like pulling down to the demonic realm. So vampires, werewolves, pornography, brutality, violence, anger, fury, revenge, all of those kinds of petty emotions that unfortunately we see peddled all the time on television and, the world that we're in. And then there is Raja movement, and that is a materialistic culture. It's a horizontally moving. So the Raja culture produces, bigger is better, better cars, bigger houses, yummy clothes, a whole closet full of a million shoes you don't need. It's replete with creativity, but at a materialistic level. And what we have, of course, is a Raja culture. We're living in a very materialistic world. There is, of course, a subculture of tamasic energies. These are the negative, bigoted anger, fury, rape, pillage, energies that we see around us. And then there is a subculture of people who are really working for higher consciousness. They're trying to help the animals, help the earth, stop pollution, you know, go green, eat healthier, you know, be kind to others, you know, more Christed energies, if you want to call them that. So there's a subculture on both the downward and the upwardly pulling energy. And when you really look at your own, how we spend our activities in the day, you know, it's not about doing all of one thing just so that our audience knows. It's about a balance. For example, I'm a mystic, I'm a clairvoyant, I'm a healer. I spend probably 70% of my days writing, teaching, helping people, and so forth. So I'm spending a lot of time in my sattva energy. But so to balance that out, occasionally I go shopping. We have to have shopping therapy because I need a little Raja in my life. Or I'll go watch a good vampire movie because I need a little Tamasuk in my life. So it's not about being all one thing or all the other. It's about the fact that you have to find the balance. And obviously, we want to make wiser choices that connect us with our higher self. My roommate, for example, she works at a for the merchandise mart. So all day long, she does merchandising. She does Raja all day long. So what does she want to do on the weekend? She wants to get a massage. She wants to go to a spiritual class. She wants to do something to uplift her because she's steeped in materialism. So she needs a different kind of balance. So, you know, everybody has to make that decision for themselves. But all this was known, of course, in the Egyptian culture, which was primarily a sattva culture. The music, the art, the jewelry, the carvings, the temples, the statescraft, everything was oriented towards, you know, realizing that we're eternal souls, that what we do in this life matters, that reincarnation is real, and that our karma will come back and bite us in the rear end if we're not acting in integrity, and to elevate us to a higher degree of consciousness. Of course, there were Raja people that were materialistic, of course. Of course, they had to maintain armies because there were other cultures that were trying to constantly invade Egypt. But they probably weren't really into pornography. They probably got rid of most of the Tamasuk things in their culture. And so, you know, when we start looking at the foundation of our civilization, most historians think it starts with the Greeks. And the Greeks were wonderful because they did go, they were the first culture that went from the divine right of kings to rule, which was passed down through the lineage of the gods, to democracy. However, the Greeks were also very warlike. And but they did have philosophy, they did have arts, they did have music, they did have sciences, they had all of those things as well. You know, there was a lot of Greek culture that was really good, but definitely, you know, you watch the movie like The 300 and you realize there was lots of war and war and more war as well.
One thing that I'm feeling is that with the current state of affairs, we can't expect all of a sudden that we're going to become a sattva culture.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of evolutionaries feel that we're coming into a time of integrative evolution, which is really, I think, bringing in those three gunas together in a positive, in a way that
is balanced,
affects all balance in life. So many people, especially New Age people, are just praying for a sattva universe that, and we can't necessarily expect that to happen in a universe that's so physical.
Yes, and I've just done a series of incredible classes for this online university. It's the website is Sacred Stories Media, but the university is called Sacred U, not Y-O-U, but U like university. And I've done one on the lost years and secret teachings of Jesus that is incredible. I've done one on the sacred feminine, the history of the goddess, the Merovingian bloodlines, the quest for the Holy Grail, Mary Magdalene, that's incredible. And I've just finished one on the Egyptian mysteries. And I love the mysteries because to me, they are, as I said, they're the foundational piece that returns us back to our understanding of the ancient wisdom, which is as perennial and applicable today as it will be in 1,000 years and as it was 2,000 or 5,000 years ago. And so we just have this class running for about a month. It took me actually 2 months to put it together, and actually they'll run it longer, but they're doing a special on it now where you can take about 10 hours of the class, and you know, you sign up, they send it to you, or and you can watch it in your own leisure. And each of the classes is about an hour, hour and a half. And I actually go into the mysteries of the Philosopher's Stone. What were the alchemists looking for in the Middle Ages, which was of course a symbol for this process of alchemy, inner alchemy, to transform, let us say, the tamasic energies or the raja energies into the sattva energies. How to transform the egoic self that's petty and, you know, egotistical into the divine self, and thus attain immortality and wisdom in the process. I get into the structure of the great spiritual mystery schools. I talk about the founders of the schools, which were Thoth, the god of wisdom. I love Thoth. He wrote the Emerald Tablets. He wrote the Egyptian Book of the Dead. He wrote the Kabbalion with and the seven principles of Hermetic law behind all things and behind the whole universe. He was amazing. And he was the father of Isis. And of course, Isis is the I Am principle of the divine feminine. So, you know, she was thought of as the head of the mystery school. The Melissas is what those priestesses were called. And later in the Jewish culture, they were called the Deborahs. And so they were the keepers of the nectar of wisdom that preserved this knowledge for future generations. And, you know, in the ancient world, there were only two preservatives, salt and honey. That was it. So bees produce honey. And of course, they have the six-sided hexagonal, you know, little beehives, which is like the Star of David or the, you know, the Flower of Life. So, I mean, it's all deeply encoded. I teach a whole class on Hermetics, which is the secret symbol language that the ancients used to encode this deep wisdom in, which literally acts as a key access to open up these doors of consciousness in the person's higher self. And, you know, and I talk about the gods and the goddesses and the principles they represented. Anyway, I'm real excited about the series, and we're just
launching it. Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's a fun series. We've already gotten 5-star reviews, you know, and it's only been out like about a week or something. So, you know, anyone who's interested, I have to update my website today, TrishaMcCannonSpeaks.com. So it's not even on there, but hopefully by tomorrow it will be. And because we've just finished the class, but you can go to Sacred Stories Media and look under Sacred You, and you can actually watch the first module for free, which is like an hour, hour and 15 minutes. And wow. Each one of these courses. So, you know, it's really great. And I'm excited about it because I love ancient Egypt. And the more we excavate it and the more we understand about it, the more we realize that probably the traditional version that we've been taught of history, where we say it started 3100 BC, is probably when the, you know, human kings began to rule. Before that, there were the demigods, and before that, there were the gods. And these, of course, were very long-lived, you know, human, extraterrestrial beings, very tall, that, you know, were world civilizers who had an enormous amount of information. And they taught us the foundations that we have built all civilization on, all the arts, all the sciences, mathematics, sacred geometry, architecture, herbology, healing, law, magic, medicine, metallurgy, statesmanship, city planning. I mean, it's literally the mother load, so to speak. Mother load and mother land.
So these demigods and gods were the teachers of the humans.
Yes.
Who in the end became our Egyptian
pantheons,
heroes.
Exactly. And, you know, let me say today, as you may know, Peter, I have seen UFOs since I was little. I've been on board them. I have spoken at many conferences, not only about, you know, Atlantis, Antarctica, ancient Egypt, you know, the Divine Mother, Jesus, but also about the world of UFOs. And it's that's a complex world. But I think today, as we are starting to come to the realization that a lot of the legends of the gods, the Greeks, the Romans, the Norse gods, the East Indian gods, the Mayan gods, the Egyptian gods, that they were actually based in humans interacting with very tall, long-lived, advanced, scientifically advanced, sometimes spiritually advanced, sometimes not so spiritually advanced, sometimes just as kind of
characters.
Yes, exactly. They were just as human as us. I mean, they were having sex. They were, you know, sometimes fighting each other. They were not all evolved, okay? But some of them really were evolved, and they were much more evolved in a lot of ways than we were around technology and the foundations of civilization. And I think that for a while there in the UFO world, it was very popular to start thinking that they were all horrible, you know, oh, maybe they're reptilians. Well, there are reptilians, but it wasn't these guys, okay? Or they're grays. No, the grays are a different group altogether. Oh, we were slaves of the gods. Well, yes, I think that there was a period of time where humans were used as a slave labor, but there were also many of these beings who were very enlightened. They loved humanity. They promoted humanity. They kind of jump-started a lot of our DNA to kind of progress us forward.
Probably and even limited it, too.
Pardon me?
And even limited it also, our DNA. I mean, they jump-started it.
They did.
But they also needed us to be subservient to them.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, I think we should just ask ourselves, if we went to another planet where the people were like little hobbits, 3 feet tall, and they lived for 25 years and we lived for 100 years, what would we do? How would some people would be willing to exploit their minerals and, you know, take what they want. Others would have compassion for the people who live there and try to help them, try to teach them, try to befriend them, try to enlighten them and raise them up. So really, these people these parents of ours, they act just like we do. You have the good, the wonderful, the bad, and the ugly. And you've got the whole mixture. And so, of course, they... Exactly. So you have some like Thoth and his daughter Isis and her husband Osiris and their son Horus, who were really enlightened beings who loved humanity and were all about the spiritual awakening and enlightenment of the human race. And you had others that really were kind of there to, you know, exploit the resources of our planet and, you know, get out of there because they had their own agenda. So, you know, it's a complex subject that is... In today's popular thought, there's a lot of fear about ETs. And I think we have to back off of that and just kind of realize that, you know, we have a universe that has beings that are very enlightened who really do want to help us. We have some that are exploitive, just as we ourselves exploit our own populations, exploit our animals, exploit our oceans, exploit our forest. We have people from other planets that are exploitive, just like we are. And we have others that really would like to come into some kind of an equal partnership with us. So it's not like one size fits all or it's all one easy answer. But I think we have to remain open, grateful for the good things. And also, you know, in many ways, I think we're kind of like... We're kind of like someone who's 21 years old. We've gone through a lot of different phases. First, we loved the gods. You know, they were our parents. Then we went through our teenagehood. We rebelled against the gods. You know, hell no, we're not going to take it anymore. Then they left. Then we grieved over the fact that they were gone. Then we decided to deny the fact that they even existed. And we turned them into myths and fairy tales and legends. And now we're coming full circle to go, oh my gosh, they were like real. They really interacted with us. And so now we're in the, you know, and you're not coming back and taking our authority from us anymore, damn it. We're our own people, our own civilization. We're going to build a space war out there so you can't get to us. So we're like a 21-year-old. I can handle my own life now. But I think if we can kind of look at it from a higher perspective, that we have come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. And a lot of these civilizations are much older than we are, and they've gone through the same growing pains that we're going through. And they figured out how to stop fighting each other, having war, enslaving races, and they actually have technologies that could help us to clean up our planet. So, you know, in the Egyptian mysteries, I'm really talking about, you know, some of these hidden secrets. And I'm basing it in history as well as my very deep knowledge of the great spiritual mysteries. So I'm always a student of those mysteries as well, of course, as a teacher of them, because you never stop learning.
Sure. No, but it amazes me the body of knowledge that you've already acquired, that you, everyone who has read your books understands that you're an extreme researcher.
Yeah, I am. Well, you know, I've written 4 books, Dialogues with Angels, the book on the lost years and secret teachings of Jesus. You can just put in Tricia McCannon, Jesus, under, you know, Amazon.com. And of course, they're all on my website. The Return of the Divine Sophia, which is about healing the earth through the rebalancing the divine feminine and masculine together. And then my latest book about the landscapes of heaven is called The Angelic Origins of the Soul. And meantime, of course, I have this huge body of work around the Egyptian mystery schools that I have been teaching for about 14 years. And I finally, after so many people asked me all over the world if I would put these courses online, I finally, on my website, if you go to the mysteries, there's a drop down on online classes. You can actually take, there's 12 modules, and they're each like 100, 150 pages of classes with, you know, processes and exercises and so forth. And they're different, very complementary to this this series that I've just created for Sacred You. The series on Sacred You, you know, you're really immersed in the images. I'm teaching and talking to you the whole time. And the images, it took me about 8 weeks of, you know, 8-hour days to put together this series. So it's a very beautiful series. But it is really augmented by the written courses that I have online. And so,
right, so very entertaining, not just educational, but visually very impressive.
It is. I have to say, you know, I was a commercial photographer and a graphic designer in my straight Clark Kent life for many, many years. And I'm a clairvoyant. I've read for over 6,000 people around the world. And I've started painting, by the way, in the last 9 months, which is really fun for me. And of course, there are a lot better painters than me, but I'm, you know, I'm not bad. And with hermetics, I feel like if you can see how these images, these symbols have been encoded from ancient Egypt through these different cultures, even when this wisdom had to go into underground, the underground stream during the many centuries of the Inquisition, the many centuries of suppression from the church. If you can see them side by side, you go, oh my stars, I totally understand now what it is, what, who was an initiate, and how it was being passed down. And today, this time is the time for these mysteries to come out once again to the public, so that, you know, they're not hidden behind a smoke screen, they're not hidden behind a concrete wall, you can't get to them. This is one of my great passions, is trying to bring this great truth and wisdom back out into the world so that we can apply it to our own lives and transform our own lives and our own society to connect with that higher vibration.
Right. It's not like we have to figure it all out, although we do have to bring it into present context. But there's so much there, so many truths there for us. Just, you know, I've been doing so many shows on like Taoism and the ancient times, and, you know, and even the Bhagavad Gita. It's amazing how rich and deep it all is for us just to soar with. I mean, it's sattva. It brings us right into it.
Well, you know, you're very right. And the ancients talk about the fact that there were these various cycles in time. And I know that's not the primary focus of this show, but they talk about the fact that there was a period of time on the earth where most of the cultures were sattva-based. They were really oriented towards the light. and towards remembrance of who we are. And then slowly they kind of, that was the golden age. Then they went down to the silver age where we were a little less aware. Then the bronze age where we're even less aware. And then the Kali Yuga or the iron age where we really fell asleep into materialism, superstition, and ignorance, which is, as far as I'm concerned, definitely the dark ages, you know, is one of those that's, you can, we can look at that and go, that's where we were. So during the Renaissance, we begin to creep back out of that where science became very important. So it wasn't just superstition, it was observable, repeatable science. And thank God for science. And now we're at the place where science and spirituality are starting to come back together with incredible physicists like Michio Kaku and others who have figured out that a lot of these cosmological stories and legends from Egypt, from the Hindus, from the Druids, that there is a scientific base, you know, from the Big Bang on, that they can suddenly understand that the cosmic egg is, you know, perhaps reflective of the galaxy, which literally is a sheath, like a cosmic egg, that there is a divine mother and father that dwells within them, which of course in the Abrahamic religions, we've just been taught about the divine father and maybe the divine son, but somehow we've missed the divine mother and the divine daughter. So of course we've created societies that are very out of balance because our cosmological underpinning of our philosophy has been, you know, God is in heaven, you know, hell is below us, and therefore through subconscious association, the earth gets trashed because that's what's below our feet. And of course, in the ancient worlds, they understood there is an expression that is beyond gender of the divine, but once it begins to come into something we can experience, it's the divine mother and the divine father, both of which have a very beautiful aspect, the divine son and the divine daughter, who periodically come to earth to help humanity. And of course, you know, if we have patriarchal religions that keep trying to denigrate the divine feminine, or shove it under the rug, or turn poor little Mary Magdalene into a prostitute, or, you know, whatever it is that they're going to do, just deny, you know, then we have an out of balance society. And now I think is the time when at the end of the age of Pisces, the beginning of the age of Aquarius, where this higher knowledge is being poured down to our planet.
And this is the purpose for your book, Return of the Divine Sophia. But we're really getting to the end of the show. And I can just so enjoy listening to you. And it's amazing what you know and what you offer. So again, what's your website?
Yeah, it's Tricia McCannon, T-R-I-C-I-A, that spelling, McCannon, just like it sounds, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N, speaks.com. That's my website. And, you know, there's a lot of good stuff, books, DVDs, there's podcasts, there's seminars, and I'm actually updating it for the Egyptian class in the next day or so. And then if you want to check out the classes, go to Sacred Stories Media. And then they've got an online magazine. They've just done a big spread on me that'll come out this week on the Egyptian mysteries. But you can click on Sacred U for University, and you'll see all three of my courses as well as some other great courses there. You can watch the first module of each one for free and then go, you know, sign me up. I want to see the rest of them.
Right, this is wonderful. Tricia McCannon, thanks so much. I love talking with you. And
so much, Peter.
So wonderful to hear what you have to tell us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. See you again very soon.
I look forward to it, my friend.
And this is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening.